Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sport administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
Thanks, Colleen. In this episode, we look at headlines and deadlines, capturing historic moments in sports. And we go straight to the source, Andre Lowe. Andre is sports editor at the Gleaner Company and has several years of experience in sports journalism. Of course, he's four-time Press Association of Jamaica Sports Journalist of the Year in sports, of course, and has covered many international sporting events, including three Olympic Games, four World Championships, two Commonwealth Games, World Indoor Championships, several Diamond League events, 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup, and of course, UEFA Champions League. He's a Juventus supporter.
You should have started there, sir.
Okay, I probably should have started there. Andre Lowe, welcome.
Thank you for having me, sir. It's an absolute pleasure. I don't want to just go working, you know, because I'm used to asking the questions, but I'll do my best.
No, man, definitely. we appreciate you being here with us. You're a Juventus supporter. How comes you're not a Liverpool supporter? Well, let's not go to the Liverpool part. You're Juventus.
And bear in mind, too, that Juventus and Liverpool share a lot of history. The last time we won the Champions League, many, many moons ago, too long ago, we of course defeated Liverpool. And of course, we are bound together by that hazel tragedy.
Yeah,
we're going to kill off some of our supporters then. But Juventus, that was from, 94 World Cup, I think. Everybody in my household was supporting Brazil.
Okay.
Being the person I am, I just decided to support Italy. And after the fact, I realized that I've always been someone who read a lot. I read that the majority of that Italy team were Juventus players.
Right.
And so for the first two or so years after that, it was just a casual kind of support. Over time, it grew into what it is today. My first love.
Of course. Let's back up a bit. You would have done a lot of journalism. What prompted you to go into, firstly journalism and, of course, to do sports journalism?
I think first of all, it was my love for writing. Ever since I knew myself, I was drawn to words and, you know, just how powerful words are in terms of conveying a message or, you know, relaying information or sharing emotions.
Right.
And I was told by my mom, who of course, you know, passed last year. I was told by her that when I barely started reading, I used to pull out the Gleaner, sit in front of my dresser and pretend to be reading news. So, I mean, it's amazing that I'm actually now at the Gleaner, 10 years now, remarkably. But I've always been interested in words, and naturally, for some reason, I was drawn to sports as well, and it became a natural kind of synergy.
10 years at the Gleaner, but before that, what was your passion in terms of just career-wise? Was it that you always thought that journalism would be it?
Yeah, absolutely. Before the Gleaner, though, I was at that other newspaper. and before that, I was actually at the Sunday Herald. That's where I got my opportunity.
Okay.
Big respect to Mr. Desmond Richards, who took a chance on a young man and threw him in the deep end, but but still was always a source of inspiration,
right?
And tough love, so to speak. And I think those 4 or 5 years at the Sunday Herald were some of the most important in my life. But funny enough, I had never wanted to do anything else besides media. There was no point when, you know, I considered any other profession. It was always journalism for me. And I'm really grateful to people like Mr. Richards, Mr. Grandison at the Gleaner right now, like Ian Burnett at The Observe, and Audley Boyd as well, who have always, you know, given me this sort of support and the environment and opportunity to express myself and to grow.
But no matter what, I mean, when you get that first big assignment, let's talk about at the Gleaner now, and you have to cover that assignment. Walk us through what that was like.
All right, I'll tell you what. So, I'll take it back
to
the Herald. My first assignment was centered around the 2004 Olympic Games in Athens. I was here in Jamaica, and I had to do a story, I think, on those very fancy kits that the 4x1 women wore.
Right.
And I had to find, look at you, just so fresh out of school, I had to find folks at Western Sports, who of course at the time, I'm not sure if they still are, but were distributing Puma gears and, you know, had to do a lot of stuff around that. And just seeing my name in the newspaper for the first time on the Sunday, that was one of the most rewarding experiences for me. Now, moving from there and some of the things I did there, I kind of already had a little sort of reputation when I arrived at the Gleaner. But I also saw it as a far greater challenge and a greater opportunity, given the platform, to really have an impact in sports journalism. So the very first story I did at the Gleaner was something related to Kieran Stewart.
Okay.
Very good friend of mine as well. And, you know, actually ended up on the front page of the sports section. So it wasn't a bad start, you know?
Fair enough. And then, so you had the 2004 Athens. We moved to Beijing and you were at that Olympic Games.
Yes.
One of those defining moments for Jamaican track and field. Walk us through some of what you had to do then, and you know, help us to understand some of the stuff that must be done on a day-to-day basis on these assignments.
Bear in mind, this was my first major international assignment, and I was doing it at the time for the Sunday Herald, a weekly publication.
Right,
and so the dynamic was far different from what now pertains. That would have also been before the advent of social media, the levels so. that we now know it. But it really was a challenge for me as a young journalist in a country that was so far removed from Jamaica culturally, as China is, and having to deal with some of those issues, you know, and then having to find stories that 1 week later will be relevant, you know. So that for me was a very rough introduction as well to international sports coverage. You know, but it was also one that allowed me to appreciate some of those challenges and helped me to develop some of the skills that were applied, you know, in years beyond that. So,
how difficult was it, certainly in that Olympics, to get the information, send it off quickly? There's a time difference between Beijing and Kingston, Jamaica.
And people don't appreciate that, you know. Listen, our athletes work really, really hard. I don't grudge them for the work they have to do to accomplish what they have accomplished. But I don't think people really appreciate. And you will, because, you know, you have traveled as well and served as, you know, chef de mission and many other roles as well. I don't think a lot of persons appreciate the sort of work and dedication and commitment and research and effort and time that goes into covering these major events and providing information for the wider public. For instance, China would be, 13 hours ahead of us?
I think so.
Thereabouts. So let's just put it on the table.
Certainly Beijing.
So the Gleaner's deadline is, say, 8:30 or whatever the case might be, right? PM. So if a race run in China, the last race is what? Like after 9, 9:30 thereabouts at major championships. By the time for Beijing, it was crazy. So when Bolt, for instance, run a race 9 o'clock, he's not getting to you in the mix zone until 10 o'clock, right? A full hour, because, of course, he has to talk to all the other
journalists.
All the journalists. You would now have to put all your stories together and that kind of stuff. It might take you another 2-3 hours to write another 6-7 stories to, you know, fill up all the space you have to fill up for your products. And that is what? So that's 12 o'clock in China. You can't go to bed, you know, until all the production is done at home in Jamaica, until every story is on the page and it's proofread and placed on the page and the design is good and you see it and everybody's happy with that.
Right.
Because if there are any questions to be asked,
they need to contact you.
They need to contact you. So I can tell you, in Beijing, most of us would have been going off to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and up again at 6. So try doing that for 2 weeks.
Right.
Non-stop. And then, of course, you look at the other factors, like people are, you know, leaving their families and having to deal with those kind of things as well. And again, dealing with the dynamics and challenges of being in a foreign country, and in some cases you might be encountering racism, as we did in Russia, in Moscow, in 2013, and many other issues that you have to contend with as journalists. And I don't think a lot of people really can understand that, because we never really get a chance to speak about these things. And we don't, for the most part, because it's our job. And, you know, it's also a great privilege and opportunity to share in those experiences and to share those experiences, rather, with the wider public. So, you know, you don't complain.
How difficult is it, or probably not difficult, but how challenging is it? It's pretty much the same for you in just trying to capture those moments as they happen, and to ensure that in putting it in the paper, the reader is getting the same feeling as you are getting and almost seeing what is happening at the party.
That's a challenge, right? That's a challenge, because, well, especially now, because people are already seeing the races and so forth. So you have to, for the most part, go into the event, into the championship or the days, with an idea of what you're going to be pursuing. It cannot be that Dalton Myers won the 100 meters in 22.5 seconds.
Because everybody know that already.
22.5 seconds.
Well, yeah.
Right? Everybody know that already. You know what I mean? You have to find the story behind that. You have to find...
What caused it?
How you arrived at that point? Who's the person in... Where come from again? St. Elizabeth, Manchester. Who's the person down there who shared in your journey to that point, you know, and bring those stories to the fore. So it's really all about preparation. And again, I've never had a problem expressing myself. And I've always tried to, because I read a lot. In the mornings, I get up, I read, even though I just read a lot of things, right? A lot of different writers, a lot of different writing styles, and the things that appeal to me, the things that grab me. Those are the things I try to replicate and bring into my writing style as well. A little bit of color, ensure that there are facts and there's balance and the time and pace, all information, so people are kept interested until the end as best as possible. Sorry.
One of the things that we notice about was certainly your career is that you have gone to many different type of events, multi-sport games, single sport, championship, cups, etc. What are some of the differences or similarities that you notice with these games?
Well, I mean...
Or these events, sorry.
First of all, that's not here by chance, you know. I have a very wide interest. That's a base or whatever. I'm interested in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And even in my early days in media, I used to write for basically every section, whether it's business or lifestyle, whatever. Mm-hmm. Hard news... I've contributed to every single section. And the same applies for sport. I love every sport, even the ones I don't really understand, like curling. I'm trying to understand that sport.
Is all right. I don't understand curling, and it's quite fine at this point.
But I like to watch it doing it. It's quite amusing. But that's just me. Yeah. All right. So I try to, you know, engross myself in all different sports and activities. There are differences. I will say that one of the hardest events I've covered as a multidisciplinary event is the Commonwealth Games.
Why so?
Simply because the qualifying standards are a little lower than the Olympics. Right. And so you'll find that as far as Jamaica's interest is concerned, you have far greater participation and involvement. So whereas in the Olympic Games, you might have, you know, outside of track and field, you might have an extra one or two persons competing. In the Commonwealth, there you have a lot of athletes in a lot of different sporting disciplines that you have to be familiar with, and they all have a story to share. They all have a journey to share as well. And so the onus is on you as a reporter to, you know, be in several places at once.
Right.
You know the scheduling sometimes, you know.
It's pretty tough.
Boxing or go on same time as badminton or table tennis or whatever, and you have to be around everybody at some point to share their story. So the Commonwealth Games, definitely. Same with the player for the Pan Am Games and, you know, and those regional type tournaments. Very, very difficult to cover. Even though I always tell people that the hardest thing I've ever covered is champs. And if you can cover champs,
boys and girls championships in Jamaica.
If you can cover that, you cover anything in the world. Just because of the core challenges that are involved in covering that event. From getting results to each up in one tight space of a stadium. Can't wait for that redevelopment of the stadium, you know?
The Media Tribune.
The Media Tribune. That if that's what we call it there. The Media Pen is what I like to call it.
Oh boy, it's pretty rough there for you guys.
Yeah,
well, so then came other things, you know, it's now called the Diamond League, and you would have seen a lot of the changes and being a part of it. What is your feeling towards that, and how difficult or easy is it to cover events such as the Diamond League?
It's fairly easy to cover the Diamond League. I think it's an important part of the track and field calendar. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect because it really is only providing an opportunity for a certain type of athlete, right?
Yeah.
And so the vast majority of athletes will never get a lane in the Diamond League.
Probably
and
80%
of them. Yeah, and so it's still, there's still the question of how do those athletes get these opportunities and to provide for themselves and showcase their talents and so forth. But again, it's a business and you have to rise to the top to get that opportunity. But as far as coverage is concerned, it's a fairly easy event to cover. It's one day, the athletes are in maybe 2 or 3 days prior and they are far more relaxed at a Diamond League than they are at a championships. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Every athlete, nice. Them good. They speak to you. Everybody is happy. There is not a lot of tension. And you have to understand it as well. As a journalist, you have to be able to be sensitive to some of these things and appreciate that. Because an athlete might come off a little rough or don't want to speak to you. It's not because they don't like you or they don't want to speak to the Jamaicans. It's because they are in a high-level, high-pressure international track and field competition and there is this tension. So you have to be able to relate to that and, get them a little more comfortable. And, get the interviews. But we don't have that problem at the Diamond League. People are relaxed. They talk. And, of course, the deadlines are never going to be as strict as with other events because the Diamond League, you're going to get maybe 3 or 4 stories out. Mm-hmm. That's the expectation for the first day. But with the World Championships or Olympics, you're doing over 10 stories, literally, a day,
It's
a far easier thing to cover.
I was going to ask you, how difficult is it then to ensure that you're getting that story, that big story, in everything that is happening? It is the same Diamond League for everybody. It's the same World Championship. It's the same world record. How do you get that story that you say, well, this is a story?
And by big story, again, it doesn't have to be controversial or, or chattering or anything like that. But again, everybody, you have to appreciate and understand that everybody has and a story. Everybody has a journey. Okay. Everybody had a challenge. Everybody has some sort of success, right? And it's really all about preparation and communication. You know, you have to maintain relationships with their handlers, the coaches, people in and around the sport. And so you go into that interview, not just asking shallow, empty questions, hoping for something interesting to fall out of the sky. You're asking pointed questions around a specific topic. Because you already know something about this person that's interesting. You just want to get the quotes to supplement that information that you already have.
All right, fair enough. The other thing I wonder then, as we talk about headlines, we talk about deadlines, we talk about getting in that information, how do you manage that balance of talking to an athlete, getting certain information, but you don't necessarily want to use it, or you don't want to reveal your source? How do you manage that balance with getting the information without revealing too much, but still manage to be successful with whatever you're doing?
I mean, the important thing is, first of all, understanding the situation. Understand what is pertinent information and what is supplemental information that you can use for background. And it's also important always, and it's a rule of journalism, all right? To protect your sources at all times. So a man can give you information and you go out there off the record, for instance, and you go out there and call him name. You're not only damaging your relationship with that person, but you're also potentially damaging their relationship with others as well. So there is that element of trust that it must always be applied.
In Jamaica, we're fortunate that the laws help to protect freedom of the press.
Yes.
Right? Because in some spaces, it's really not. But how difficult is it sometimes when you know people are pressuring you, like, I need to know where this is coming from?
I've never been in that situation before, thankfully. Okay. And now that I'm in my current role, I've never asked of a reporter to reveal their sources. At the end of the day, too, you also know your reporters and your supervisors know who you are. Mm-hmm. And if reporter A comes to you, given their credibility and track record, and say, listen, I've heard this from a source, you, as a supervisor or an editor, must be able to say, okay, this gentleman, I know he has strong sources and he's credible. Fine, I trust a source. Ensure you have your notes. Ensure you have all that. And of course, your only concern now is just ensuring that the facts are being presented and that you're not libeling anybody or slandering anybody. But no, I've personally never had to deal with a situation where I've been asked to reveal my source.
In this new age of journalism, is it more challenging or is it less challenging in terms of things like, well, not necessarily plagiarism, but I can use that, or worry about persons giving you material to edit that may be other person's material?
That I've had to deal with in the past. And I won't go too much into that.
Right, no, that's fine.
Yeah, but yeah, that is always a worry. And that's why you educate. And that's why you guide. Because there might be someone, a younger reporter or something, coming into the profession who might not have a full understanding of the requirements where this is concerned. And so it's really the onus on the supervisors, the company as a whole,
right.
More experienced reporters and journalists to educate the younger ones and to, you know, pay attention to what they're doing, ask them how you got this information, where's this quote coming from, you know, and you'll hopefully pick up on these sort of situations. But yeah, we have seen those cases.
Listen, Andre, I have to touch on something.
Of course.
I've been a big critic, for lack of a better term, with the journalism in Jamaica, especially as it regards to, you know, adverse analytical finding or just the use of material. I think, and I've personally talked this one through because I've done a column.
I read a
on
column,
it,
yes. I edited
that,
it.
I figure you edited it. I was wondering if you guys would publish it. But
I
know you would. I personally believe in general that a lot of the information that we get in trying to break the news, etc., that we don't always use care for the athletes or the situation.
And you're speaking specifically to the most recent case.
Not necessarily, you know. In fact, the most recent
What I will say is that in the past, we have been a little, if I am to be honest, and I may even touch myself as well and say in the past, we have been a little bit insensitive in some of these cases. But again, that comes down to experience and maturity and exposure and stuff like that. But if we are to be fair, I would say that over the last few years, especially particularly senior reporters in Jamaica who generally handle these sort of information, I think there's a greater respect for the process. There's greater patience, right? And greater communication with the parties involved. And greater sensitivities, I would say. Let us be clear now. A journalist's only obligation is to the facts and fairness. Anything else is a courtesy that's been extended. Let's be clear on that.
Fair
right?
enough.
And I know this is a touchy topic, but let's say there is an A sample that returns an adverse analytical finding. Right. You say positive test, it's an incorrect.
I know. I was going to go into that also because even in the media, there are sections of the media.
Yes,
let's use that. Sorry,
right.
There are persons who talk about a positive test.
That is not possible. Not possible for an A sample, right?
Right.
Generally, what we tell our reporters and what we practice is we do not reveal any serious or implicating or identifying information around an A sample, because we don't have to do that, you know, because an AAF in an A sample is an AAF in an A sample, and that is news.
Correct.
That's a fact, right? Is it fair to state that person's name? We can argue about that, but it's a fact, and the journalist's only obligation is to the fact. Okay, good. Now, to say that we are going to allow the process to continue and wait for a confirmation of that AAF in the B sample is a necessary courtesy as far as I'm concerned, and as far as most of my colleagues, senior colleagues, are concerned. And what we tend to do after that, all right, is reach out directly to involved parties. All right, so I'm being very clear there, right?
No problem.
All right, and then we go with the information. Now, without calling any names, if you would take a look at, for instance, the most recent situation, the very unfortunate situation, that's exactly what happened. we spoke directly with the legal team and other parties directly associated with that particular individual.
Mm-hmm.
And they were well aware of what the situation was and what was going to come up next. Now, I don't want to say whether they approved or not. That's really not important, right?
Chances are they're not going to confirm it, eh?
Really? No, man.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right? Because you're not asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
You're presenting information.
Right.
All right? You're not asking if it's happened. You know it happened. And you're saying this is what happened.
What's your response?
Exactly. And people are generally more than happy to respond in that situation. So let's just leave it at that. Right? Yeah. But I think that's more than fair. That's more than fair because there is a confirmation that there's an AAF. From the A sample, and you're not, and that's that, right? And when the athlete is cleared, or when the process develops, you give it the same sort of prominence as well, you know. And I think people get the wrong impression, you know, that a journalist don't often like what he writes about, you know. And they don't take pleasure. People think it's fair enough.
Yeah, I mean,
people, they don't often like what they're writing about.
And not even suggesting that they have to.
But there are people who do, and I think it's important that. There are a lot of news that people write that they wish they didn't have to write, you know. But again, their obligation must be to their profession and must be to the facts. If I'm to be very candid here, I have written stories already that I wish I didn't have to write. And there's one particular story I wrote that...
You're going to tell us which one?
I can. Okay. That just because of the context of what it meant for Jamaican track and field, and I'm a passionate... Listen. I love Jamaica, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big I'm a big sport fan. And I'm a outside the Juventus, right? Track and field is my thing, right? And I mean I did not call on him and bring up that situation.
Okay,
but there's one major athlete who tested positive. And it was massive international news. And I had to eventually write that story, name that person, whatever. You know, that was a story that I'm not an emotional guy, you know, my friend, but I got pretty emotional just because of what it meant to a sport that I love and to a person who I have tremendous respect for as an athlete, you know. And a lot of people never recover from these sort of situations. And as you are aware, that in many cases, there is really no indication of an intent to cheat, but it's such a...
But isn't that
it's walking? It's walking on glass, right? But having said that, I know where you're going, and let me just preempt you. Having said that, it's a responsibility that must be taken seriously by all parties involved, including athletes, right? So it's confusing and it's difficult for them. But you're a professional. If the obligation is to ensure that you take responsibility for what goes into your system, then it's a responsibility that you must bear, right?
But one of the challenges or one of the points locally, Andre, is that people say the difference between our local media or sections of our local media versus international media in dealing with their respective local cases seem to be different.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, fair enough.
People like to nitpick, but I don't know if that's true.
The argument out there, no, it's fair enough. I mean, you can always respond to it. The argument out there is that, one, there are cases where athletes locally, the media has the information about their AAF even before they do. And in
that's credit to the journalists.
I'll come to that one very, very soon. But the other part of it is that how it's treated in the media is almost like they are criminals.
I tell you what,
even though the code itself kind of create that kind of a scenario.
Well, sorry, that's not my interpretation.
Okay.
I don't see it as that.
All right.
And I think
how do you see it?
First of all, let me just address the
getting off the information early.
No.
Okay.
Your original statement. People like to compare how Jamaican media cover Jamaican athletics and AAF cases in particular to how, let's say, US media covers their athletes and their AAF. But it's really an unfair comparison because the truth of the matter is that general US media don't care about their track and field athletes. It's not a big deal to them, but look at how they cover baseball athletes with these cases, or, you know, American football athletes with these cases. It will be comparable because baseball and football is so important to that community. and that market. And so there's far greater attention from their media. You won't see that same sort of attention for a track and field athlete in the US. So you can't compare track and field in the US to track and field in Jamaica, because for us, track and field is our biggest thing. And we will naturally pay greater attention to these cases for our track and field athletes. And it might seem unfair, but if tomorrow, and it should be the case, but it's a fact, if tomorrow, God forbid, an athlete in a, I don't know, let's say, I don't want to call a sport and go jinx nobody. Yeah. a smaller sport, right? Mm-hmm. So to speak, would test positive for a banned substance, it would not get the same sort of attention.
Well, unless they're very popular. Like unless we've had some.
Right, unless they're very popular, right? So it's an unfair comparison to begin with, right? And are they treated like criminals? I don't think so. I believe that from what I've seen and what I've personally tried to do is to focus on the facts, right? To place everything on the table. And that's the only thing you can require of a journalist. The journalist is not there. It's not an opinion piece. They're not giving an opinion on the matter, you know. They are simply saying, this is what happened, and this is the listed repercussions. However, these are alternative sanctions, right, or whatever. Or in the past, this person had done that and this happened, blah, blah, blah. It's presenting facts and leaving it at that. All right? So I don't see how that can be interpreted as criminalizing an individual. And to be fair, and even when I look at the wider media coverage of these unfortunate incidents, generally, I'm pretty comfortable that that's not the case.
Okay, well, I'll probably take this up again in another column. Let me ask you, Dr. Emir Krohn and I and a few other people share differences in terms of where JADCO has been going with the open versus closed door for disciplinary hearing. Mm. What's your view on it? Do you think it's a bad move, or do you think it's another move that is really helping the athletes?
I mean, in some cases, you can understand. The athletes are minor. You want to protect them. Mm-hmm. Fine. I will not argue against that, I think. But I think it's important, especially given the environment and, you know, some of the criticisms that have been cast on us in the past. I think it's important that we demonstrate the fairness of the process and that we show its credibility and not leave ourselves open to any sort of criticism or, you know, suspicions. I think it's extremely important that JADCO rethinks this position. And if you realize what's happening internationally as well, that maybe they should consider that their position is not, like they said at the time, in line with best practices.
Well, to be fair to them, it's still in line with best practices. Even though CASA's opened up probably about one or two cases out of many.
What are your views on that?
Listen, I've been interviewed this time, but...
Well, I'm pretty sure I'll see it in a column.
A journalist like yourself had to go there. Eh? No, I'm quite fine with closed door hearings in Jamaica, particularly because I think we haven't been as careful as we should in covering some of what happened in the hearings. My view, though,
is there a specific case I can point to?
Quite a number. A lot of them that have happened before. My simple view on it.
What I can say, though, is
hold on, Andre. My simple view on it is that the hearing notes, simply like how CAS have done it, that you can get the word is not coming, but like a report from it in terms of everybody, what people have said, minus obviously confidential information. So persons can still see and understand. Everybody have that information at their disposal.
That's the point I was going to make, because what I can say is that these hearings are not easy to cover.
Right. No, I've been to a few.
Yeah, they are extremely difficult to cover. And I think this is where editors and supervisors have to make a serious decision as to who they assign to cover these events. You need experienced persons who are appreciated sensitivities, and, you know, people who can decipher what's important information and what is better left you know, what is not necessary or is too sensitive for, you know. So that's something that that's maybe something that should be considered.
Yeah,
ensuring that only, you know, the more experienced persons are granted access to these hearings. But I think it's really important that we keep them open.
Here's a challenge I have, Andre, that even though we say it's open and journalists will go, we still are left with the interpretation of that journalist in carrying the news. I think the entire discussions, whatever, should be made public at the end. So similar to CAS, etc., you have a chance, even as a layman, a researcher, a student, whatever, to be able to read and understand and even compare.
I think they do, you know. I think they actually do put that on the JADCA site afterwards.
I was going to go there, but yeah. Fine. Thanks for the clarification. Listen, we've been talking about sports a lot and sports in Jamaica. What are some of the things? We've had several, you know, issues with sporting associations, and you've been covering a lot of them over the years. It seems the more things change, the more they remain the same. What are some of the observations you've made and some of the suggestions you would have for sporting associations in Jamaica?
Not all sporting associations are equal, right? And not all of them have the same sort of problems. But
right,
you find that the majority of the major ones are a little bit too out of touch with what's important. And I think a lot of these sports administrators don't realize that, yes, they're important, you know, but some of the more important stakeholders are, you know, the players themselves, you know, the general public, the media, and not enough attention is placed on those elements. There's a culture in Jamaica as well to appoint people in sports simply because they used to play sport or they have been around sports for a few years. That doesn't necessarily make them good administrators. There are a lot of bright, young, educated minds who have invested in studying principles and practices and all of these things related to sports administration who are not being given the opportunity really to have an impact in pushing sports administration in Jamaica forward. And I think there's space for them, right? There's space for freshness of thought, right? And a new age approach to communication, to marketing, to empowering, and you know, just general, you know, endowment of their athletes, and great engagement with the wider public. And I think that's, but every time I look at our track and field golden era, you know, call it that, right? Because I don't know if those days will return in our lifetime. And I look at what we have not accomplished with, you know, Bolt and Asaf and Veronica and Shelley, you know, in their prime, even though Shelley says seems to be in her prime, eh?
Shelley has remained in her prime for a while.
But you look at the opportunity missed, right? And like, how do we have these sort of names in international sport and not really capitalize on them? The J3s, for instance, still struggling to scrape money after all of this, right? Reggae boys and reggae girls qualifying to World Cups. Now we're still struggling to find money and to garner support for these teams. It's ridiculous. And it's a failure on the part of those who have been entrusted with driving these sports forward. And it's not just, I don't want to seem to be picking on the J3s and the JFF, because they do have some good people in there, or at least they have good intentions, but maybe they are not exactly equipped to really take the sport to another level.
All right, a few things I'm going to shoot at you in the next few minutes. The first one, we have issues as it regards to ethics in sports, ethics in journalism, right across. One of the things that I've read is we have had issues, not necessarily here, there's no report here, of journalists, certainly in sports, who are paid to write particular story and cover a particular area. Is that a challenge that you face, and how do you as an editor try to mitigate against stuff like those?
It's an issue for sure. I can't say that I've had any direct experiences, whether with my staff or personally. I've really never been approached. Sometimes it's the sort of vibe that you emit, you know. People know who they can approach, or them kind of thing. They just think that I know it has been a problem in other areas of media.
Right.
I don't want to say anything about maybe like, you know, entertainment or whatever. But
yeah,
it's not something that I've personally experienced, whether as a supervisor or you know, someone making that sort of approach to me. What I will say is that there have been, what I try to do, I do have a lot of friends in sport, people who I have had to cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's important as a journalist that you find the balance between that friendship and your responsibility as a journalist. You have to understand, and they have to clearly understand, that if something were to come up, that you are obligated to report factually and fairly. So for that reason, I've consciously not, like, I'm not a party with nobody, or, you know, you're not seeing nobody yard, or, you know, that kind of thing, you know, because even though you are friends, I have good relationships, you have to ensure that the lines are very clearly drawn.
So there is no bias or perception of bias.
Precisely.
Let me ask you another one. Andre, you've been covering for a while and moving from junior level to now senior.
It's like you and I, you're not our friends. You're in sports administration. No, I shouldn't even be talking to you.
well, our listeners will determine whether or not I ask your good questions. But another one I wanted to ask is, in your covering of all these major events, and know that you're at the Glean as editor and a senior man there, how have you managed to create what I consider as gender balance in covering sports, which is a male-dominated space? And
coverage?
Yeah, in terms of coverage.
I don't see gender. I swear to you. I mean, if you're doing good, if you have an interesting story, you just have an interesting story, man or woman. I've never looked at it as that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Obviously, we can't sit here and pretend as if, let's say, most of our female sporting personalities, but at least in some sport, get the sort of attention that they deserve. But again, a lot of that comes down to communication and administration of these particular sporting disciplines. It's a real problem, you know. I tell you why. Because the truth is, every newsroom in Jamaica and most companies generally is understaffed and undermanned. That's a real problem. So just imagine you have a reporter working on 15 things, and that information is fairly accessible. There are some sporting associations, and I don't know what I call them, right? Like lacrosse, right? You can never get any information from them about when their games are being played, what are the scores. I mean, how do you expect to drive the sport when reporters have to be running it down for basic things like a schedule or, you know, results? So in many cases, it's a situation where these athletes, women and men in some cases, have been let down by the people who are charged with administrating their sport.
Yeah.
But I don't say man or woman when I'm covering sport. That's
okay,
you.
Well, let me ask you a harder one then. Why we don't have more women in the newsroom or the sports desk in the Glean, sir?
Our very good mutual friend who is sitting with us was supposed to be doing sports journalism. She left the Glean and she's now doing public relations.
Right.
The truth is,
well, she's a Chelsea fan, so we can understand the decisions that are made every now and again. Right?
But no, there really,
hopefully, she don't edit out this part.
There really aren't a lot of, from my experience anyway, very good female sports journalists. I guess that's a reflection of the interest, the general interest that
because I was going to ask, is that there are not many good, or is it that we don't have a lot?
There are not many
interest
to begin with, right? Okay. You find out of the ladies, because we do look, trust me, right? And I will say this, at the risk of sounding, you know, like there's some sort of bias, that, but I believe that female writers, especially for sport, carry a totally different perspective.
Right.
I've worked with people like Dana Bogle and Keisha Hill and many others, Karen Madden. And just when you're reasoning, when you're in a group and you're reasoning about something sports related, sometimes, always have another perspective that forces you to, like, never thought about that. And so I think it's always important to have that sort of perspective and that sort of approach. in a news space, in a newsroom. But the problem is you don't have a lot of persons who are females who are interested in sports media in Jamaica. And you know, that's a real problem.
Another one I have to shoot at you. One of my criticisms, that's a personal one now, is that most of the investigative journalism that we do for print tend to be on adverse analytical finding. Why aren't we seeing more in other areas? You know, we have several that has been happening in the region. Why aren't we seeing more, and will we see more now that you're the top editor at the Gleaner?
You are right. There's certainly an opportunity for greater investigative journalism in sport. No, that's not to say that we have not seen the effort, or that's not to say that there aren't challenges where that's concerned in terms of having experienced reporters who can manage that sort of presentation in terms of just general resources, right? And I'm not making excuses, but like I said, like I started, there is this, the opportunity to do more. And let's just say that there are efforts being made to address that problem, certainly from where I sit.
All right, where you sit, and we've had a lot of other guests sitting there, and one of the questions I always ask them, what advice would you give to that young journalist who is coming up, that youngster listening now, about sport journalism, the young Andre Lowe? What would be some of the advice that you'd be giving, you want to give that young journalist?
Well, I hope they're better than Andre Lowe, to begin with. But no,
I was going to say that, not hard, but
it isn't, right? I would say definitely, listen, first of all, if it's your passion, you should definitely do it. It's not the most rewarding thing. It's one of the hardest things you're going to have to do. You're going to have to sacrifice a lot of time, a lot of energy. You won't see the people you love as often as you should. So you say a bit really love the people you work with, right? And you will get the occasional abuse. You know, like I said, it's not very rewarding in any sense of the word. But if it's something that you love, you should definitely go for it. Yeah. And be prepared to put in the work. But if your focus or if your ambition is to have some sort of impact in, you know, documenting sport, or if it's news, or if it's entertainment, whatever it is, if you want to play a part in sharing those historic moments, then that is rewarding, because that's what awaits you, and you should definitely go for it.
Yeah, you have been sharing historic moments. Is that something that drives the Andre Lowe in terms of continuing on this journey?
Like I said, I just love working with words. Of course, documenting history is always a plus if you get to share that. But for me, it's really just about using words, you know, sharing information with people, you know, trying to tell a story to someone who, you know, was not there, or someone who don't have that sort of information. That's really what drives me, just, you know, sharing information.
What's next for Andre Lowe? Tokyo 2020?
That's the plan. That's the plan.
Amazing. Listen, Andre Lowe, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. We did have a deal though.
Oh, yes. So the deal was that you would get to sing that song that I'm sure
the producer holds her head.
Rashika will get Joel to edit.
I don't
out.
Care.
Okay.
Forza la Juve, la Juve, la Juvale. Forza la Vela, la Bella, Signora. Grande la Juve, la Juve, la Juvale. Forza la Juve, Forza Juve. Champions League winners 2019-2020. You heard it here first.
Please edit out that part. So on behalf of studio engineer for us today, Joel, producer Rashika Grant, thanks for everyone for joining us on this episode of The Dry Phase. Remember, make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and also Google Podcasts or Stitcher, so you'll never miss an episode. Remember, we'd appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or any podcast that you use. Go tell a friend about the show so that they too can spread the word. Feel free to send us feedback, comments, or questions to thedrivephase@gmail.com, or look us up on Twitter and Facebook at thedrivephase, or TDP is the hashtag. Until next time, see you then.